This is the Blaze Radio On Demand.
This podcast brought to you by My Patriot Supply. Did you miss the chance to get a 72-hour emergency food supply with free shipping for just $10? What's wrong with you? Don't worry. Call 888-411-7440 right now. They have a few left, and they're selling out fast. 888-411-7440. What are you waiting for? A disaster? Do it right now.
8844-1-7440.
Ever since he got off radio, we just been
just because he did the disclaimer at the end of that dumb spot.
Which, by the way,
I mean the spot's not dumb, but the disclaimer.
The disclaimer's dumb. And by the way, the disclaimer doesn't even sound bad. It sounds completely fine.
Every time. And yet we continue to mock and belittle and berate.
That's actually one of my favorite mockings, because my favorite is now I'll be driving home and I'm thinking all of a sudden it's like 18.
I don't even know where that came
from.
I have
no idea.
Just threw out that number.
18, period, comp.
See, because you're too stupid to know that's the actual numbers that are on there.
I understand what you were.
And then you didn't know it's .com. You called it a period. So.
It's just one of my favorite things in the world to do is to mock Jeffy.
I don't know why.
Because he deserves it so much.
Well, that's why.
You know,
we do know why.
We know
okay.
why.
All right. Good.
You deserve every bit of it, Jeffy. Every single every word.
You know, a lot of people say to us, they say, Pat, Stu, why are you so nice to Jeffy?
Yeah. You're too easy.
Do they say that?
Yeah, all the time.
Oh, really?
They do that so often.
Biggest comment we get is, why are you so easy on him?
Why don't you give him some flack from time to time? He deserves it.
Yeah.
And we're like, nah, we're, you know,
we're
trying to take it easy.
Like, yeah, we got it, Amber. We can't be any harder on it. It's going to take up the whole show.
888-727-BECK. Hey, you were talking about just real quick before we get into the debate, which we're going to, but a quick note on the Missouri thing, because you talk about a story that is out of control, bizarre, and aggravating. It's that Missouri story. The latest, if you haven't heard, is that the University of Missouri police sent out an email to students and faculty. It said, hey, notify us immediately if you see anything hateful or hurtful. Hateful or hurtful. If anybody says anything hateful or hurtful to you, call us. And if you can, get a picture of them so we can find them. Now, it's obviously not a crime to say something hateful or hurtful, but we'll drag them before a disciplinary committee and have them thrown out of school for you. What Nazis these people are.
They sure are. It's bad.
And then Pinkel, the head coach of the football team, was trying to backtrack.
He did a radio interview. I sent it to you to listen. And I listened to it yesterday and was just amazed, because he was trying to draw the line between being for the players and not having anything to do with the protest.
That's a little tough to do, since the players were part of the protest.
Not having anything to do with the outcome of the president and
whether
the chancellor
or not
gone.
Jeez, are you kidding me?
I have no comment. I don't know about that. I'm just for my players. And what did you think was going to happen, Gary?
Right.
Yeah. So was he trying to...
Wow. So he's trying to distance himself from the result and the protest so that he doesn't get any flack
from
anybody. Because there was no reason to fire or get the guy, the president of the university, to resign.
His players that he's trying to make that distinction. And, you know, then they hopped on him about his the big tweet with the team and we're all for it and everything.
Right.
And that tweet was tagged with the hashtag
Concerned Student 1950.
Right. And what happened was that look, I have a person that tweets out my tweets for information, and that should have never been put on there.
Wow. Hmm. No accountability.
Okay.
I wonder if that's okay with him,
Gary.
From his players.
Not a chance.
No accountability.
No,
right.
Not.
Mm.
Huh.
Yeah, interesting.
I wonder.
We also heard yesterday some information about the hunger striker.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, is this true? Yeah.
I don't know. I have the Blaze looking into it, but supposedly the family of the hunger striker, who was so oppressed, and in his opening letter, the original letter was complaining about the health insurance being taken away from the graduate students, which he was one, mm-hmm. which had to do with Obamacare, not the university. Mm-hmm. His family is presumably, which I, you know, there were several. I found a bunch of tweets and stories about it yesterday. Mm-hmm. If it's his family, they're worth millions. So, you know, he's been oppressed his entire life.
Yeah, it usually does. I mean, I have no idea on this case, but it does usually come from. I mean, you know, the wealthy students who have that guilt or whatever are usually the ones that.
Yes, that's true.
So that's true. Pinkel, a couple things. Pinkel was essentially trying to walk back his initial support, right? So
seems like
so
it.
His support. What
I'm
he's saying
about
was,
the
look,
team,
I'm,
not the movement.
Right.
I'm about my players, about my team.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's an interesting distinction. He's just
yes,
saying.
Yes, it is. You can't make it.
So
I'm sorry.
He's reported widely that he's supporting these protests. Then after the guy is gone, that wasn't.
Oh no, I didn't.
I was supporting my players.
Other thing is the poop swastika. Can we talk poop swastika for a minute?
Sure.
I know everyone wants to talk poop swastika. So
how many poop swastikas have you made?
In my life?
In your, whole life.
Oh, my God. You're talking about when I was a kid. You're talking about, including last week.
Yes.
Poop swastika week.
Up through, today.
Today?
Like
so does
right
it include
now?
Today or does it end at midnight? Because that's an interesting.
Let's say it ends at the end of radio. How many poop swastikas?
Okay.
Now, this was human feces.
With human feces, right?
Not dog. I'm not including
cat
dog. That would take too long.
Come on.
Now, does it have to be only my human feces? Can it be anybody's?
Any human's
feces.
Poop.
Oh, my God. let's just have it carry the none.
None, huh?
In fact, I've never seen a poop swastika.
I haven't either.
Interesting thing is.
A lot of people call it a poop sticker now.
A poop sticker, yes. Yeah. So the poop sticker incident is an interesting one as it relates to this Missouri thing, because we are in the era of social media.
Right.
An era where pictures of everyone's meals are posted online. When you see something across, you see an advertisement that makes you think of someone, you post a tweet and tag them in it. Everyone posts pictures on Facebook and Snapchat and Twitter and Instagram all the time, and there are no pictures except one picture on Reddit of this poop swastika. Only one picture. Which you think, okay, that's a little crazy. There's only one picture. The other issue with the picture is it was posted in 2014, which makes you think maybe it wasn't this incident at all.
Oh, my gosh.
Now is that not only that the poop swastika incident did not occur at all.
Did any of them happen?
All a sham. The whole damn thing.
We're taking the word of the people who are the protesters that any of it happened. It's pretty bizarre. It's pretty bizarre. The other thing on another note, on Pinkel, the head coach at Missouri.
Yeah, this is a different interview
bastard.
We're talking about.
This is a separate interview. In that interview, now he's busting out the, because they play BYU this weekend.
Oh, the BYU players are old. They go on missions, so they've got 24-year-old freshmen. Shut up.
Is there anything that's a lie about that, Pat?
Yes.
The BYU players?
Just everything. Well, they go on missions, so that part is true.
I'm just messing with you.
They do go on missions. Are they a little bit older, on average, than most college football teams because of the missions they go on?
Yeah.
Yes. Does that help them? Every single time BYU does well, coaches bust out this.
They're so old. They're so mature. They're men, and we're playing against boys. And these guys they shouldn't be allowed.
The Hawaii coach used to do that when BYU would go through the 80s undefeated or, you know, national champions in one of the years. But But they never talk about the fact that they've been gone for 2 years proselytizing.
Not playing football.
Not playing any football.
And they can't even toss it around, right?
Can't toss it. One day a week, they have, like, part of the day where they can exercise, where they can, you know, do their laundry, they can go grocery
shopping. All they do is ride bikes.
And then, and in that case, like Tanner Mangum, who just went to, who just got back from Chile, and
he's a player.
Yeah, he's the quarterback of the team right now. So he just got back from Chile like 5 months ago, and so he said he threw the ball around I think twice on his mission. He, you know, they got together with some people that they were talking to and who were investigating the church or whatever, and then went out and played it a little and threw. But there can be no contact. They can't work out on a regular basis.
Yeah,
they can't play football.
If it was part of being at someone's home and sharing dinner and prayer or whatever, that's all part of the deal.
Yeah. Right. But they, you know, so it's 2 years of that. They can't watch TV. They can't listen to music. They don't go to movies. All they do is preach the gospel. Then they come back completely out of shape, not in the football mindset. They're in a spiritual mindset, because that's all they've done for 2 years is study scriptures and preach to people, and then they're supposed to play football.
So they're not really out of a shape.
And then they use that.
Oh, they're old.
Well, first of all, there's not a single 24-year-old freshman that I've ever seen at BYU. But, you know, there is a 22-year-old this year.
The other thing is he could also sign some Mormons.
Right.
And have them go on missions and have as many older players as he would. If it's such an advantage, just do it.
That is very true. That is very, yes. You know, it's such an advantage.
Why'd you do it?
Go after the 3-star Mormon players instead of the 5-star guys that you're getting from Florida and Georgia.
This is what I always say when Trump will say, oh, China's manipulating their currency. Okay, so China's manipulating the currency, lowering the prices of Chinese goods, and it's a huge advantage for China to do. So if China gets a huge advantage of it, why don't you promote it? Why don't you say the United States should start manipulating our currency and see what happens? Let's see that maybe we should also lower our wages really low to lower prices so we can export more goods.
Trump did last night.
He did say the wages were too high,
yeah,
which was an interesting thing. I haven't heard any of his supporters today who are constantly on, just every time he says something controversial or out there. He didn't say anything about that. The only thing I could say is maybe he meant the minimum wage is too high, but even that is pretty controversial in this world. He said wages were too high, though.
Right.
Again, he speaks in such broken English that I can't.
You don't.
A lot
that's
of times,
right.
I don't know what he's trying to say, but he did say that. Kind of an issue. I don't know if there's a lot. I think SE Cup actually tweeted something to the effect of today. I'm interested to hear from Trump supporters who feel that their salary is too high. I'm kind of interested, too. Maybe they do.
Yeah.
You know?
Who's SE for, has she said?
I don't know. I have had the feeling she's not a big Trump supporter. Mm. But outside of that, I don't know.
Cruz was great again last night, I thought. And here was one of his better moments on immigration.
For those of us who believe people ought to come to this country legally and we should enforce the law, we're tired of being told it's anti-immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
It's offensive.
Thank you.
I am the son of an immigrant who came legally from Cuba to seek the American dream. And we can embrace legal immigrations while believing in the rule of law. And I would note, try going illegally to another country. Mm-hmm. Try going to China or Japan. Try going to Mexico.
Thank you.
See what they do.
Right.
Every sovereign nation secures its borders, and it is not compassionate to say we're not going to enforce the laws and we're going to drive down the wages for millions of hardworking men and women. That is abandoning the working man.
So great. And that was a response, of course, to John Kasich continually hammering the pro-illegal immigration nonsense that,
come on, people. You know we can't get rid of 11 million people. We've got to embrace them. We've got to love them. But this looks bad if we don't say really good things and pander to them. That's what we have to do.
It drives me out of my mind. And Cruz made some great points there, that it's time to stop that nonsense. It's offensive to say that we are against immigration, because we're not. We want you to enforce our law, okay? Because if we don't, what kind of country? Trump keeps saying it kind of half-assedly. You don't have a country. We don't have a country. If you don't enforce your law, that's really true. If you don't have borders, if you don't have laws, you don't have much. And so we can continue to and his Kasich's point was, if they're law-abiding citizens, or if they're law-abiding, then you should let them stay. Well, they're not law-abiding. First of all, they broke the first law when they came across illegally. Now they're either committing identity theft or tax evasion. They're not law-abiding. And they might be committing other crimes as well. Mm-hmm. Many of them are. Many of them are.
To cover the first illegal act. Like, you have to create, right. It's like a lie to create it, to cover another lie. They're doing an illegal act to cover another illegal act.
Yes.
That's very, very true.
And somehow it's disrespectful to people to ask them to follow our laws. No, I'm sorry. It's disrespectful to the United States and everybody else who's following the laws to not ask that of them. Mm-hmm. And if they, you know, you're ruining families, you're breaking up families, you're breaking up communities. How can people not articulate this point to these morons who keep saying this stuff? We break up families all the time. If you're an American citizen and you break our law, you're going to go to jail. And when that happens, what goes on at your house? You're separated from your family. So why are illegal aliens sacred in that regard and U.S. citizens are not? Why? Somebody help me out with that. Mm.
By the way, I was trying to track down that SC Cup thing to see if she had announced who she was for, and I have not been able to do that. Although she has, I have seen some more interesting information, because she had just tweeted a link about the wages being too high, and it was something that I forgot about from the debate. We didn't even talk about it on the air today. Some people occasionally have problems with the way, you know, me in particular talk about Donald Trump. They don't think it's fair. They don't think it's right. And I will say, in this instance, I will give them a break on that, because I was actually being far too nice trying to give him an out when it came to that. Because mm-hmm. not only did he say Americans' wages are too high during the debate, mm-hmm. asked about it in a follow-up on Morning Joe this morning. He responded, we have to become competitive with the world. Our taxes are too high. Our wages are too high. So he's doubled down on it in an interview separately from the debate. He specifically thinks Americans make too much money. Donald Trump believes the wages of Americans are too high. He is running as a candidate to lower salaries.
That's because he's built a great country, company, mm-hmm. an incredible company. A special company, and he's.
What does that have to?
He has to pay wages that are too high.
That's true.
Too special.
He's seeing it from that CEO perspective, and like, yeah. I understand that.
Despite
when you're
the fact
running a company.
That he's a multi-billionaire that he brags about also all the time, mm-hmm. Somehow still.
I'd never heard him say anything about his. He's a billionaire.
yeah. You wow. might not have heard that. Yeah, because wow. he's pretty quiet about it.
Yeah.
It embarrasses him.
He's not the same guy that owns that place in Manhattan, is he? That.
The one tower, with the
Trump,
Bibles?
Trump Tower, yeah. Trump
yeah, that's
tower.
Where he keeps
yeah.
his special
that's
Bibles.
Not his place,
his
is
special
it?
Place. Yeah.
Ooh, the
yeah.
Bible room? Yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. Someone released pictures of his actual apartment, I guess. You know, of what? I mean, you almost understand why he has no perspective over the
oh, yeah.
I mean,
he's done so, some interviews
it's
out of
so
there.
Ridiculous. it's a Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. It's the best room in Donald Trump's best hotel. Mm-hmm. So you can picture what it looks like. It just looks like someone vomited gold all over the room. I'll never understand that look.
It's not a good look.
No.
He doesn't have good taste. Let's face it. And apparently Melania doesn't either, because the place looks like that.
You think Melania has a choice?
I was just going to say, no way she has a choice.
I don't know. All right, 888-727-BECK, 888-727-BECK. Now, no matter what challenges you think our country could be facing in the future, it's really time to get prepared, you know? And sometimes that can be a challenge. If you don't have a lot of cash on hand, it can be a little bit expensive, but that's where My Patriot Supply comes in.
Yeah, a lot of times a lot of people will spend all their money on gold leaf for their entire home to coat it. And then they'll be like, wait a minute, I don't have enough food in case an emergency hits because I've spent it on a gold
same
toilet
thing happened to me.
And a diamond-encrusted television.
Mm-hmm. So it happened to me.
It happened to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, well, a lot of yours was the diamond-encrusted name, Gray, on the front of your house.
Yeah, it's four full letters.
Which was, yeah, but they're big letters.
Big. I mean, really big.
It's kind of an interesting. Plus, you spent a lot of money on bumper stickers. You can get a two-week emergency food supply for just $50 by calling the good people at My Patriot Supply, 888-893-7953.
Yeah, but what about shipping? I mean, then the shipping, they throw in that $50 shipping fee, and then it's $100.
No, it's not. And, it's $50 because the shipping is $0. So what they've done is they've added a shipping fee of $0.
Whoa. Okay, then you're hiding the handling fee.
Well, the handling fee is part of this, I will say, at $0 as well.
Okay, tax and licensing.
I don't know anything about taxes. I don't.
Dealer plates?
It's $50. Okay. Call them. 888-893-7953. 888-893-7953. Limit two per household, and that includes you, Jeffy. So it can only get you probably not a two-week supply, more like a two-hour supply for Jeffy.
What if I call from different phones?
You could probably get away with it. I mean, what are they going to do?
Right.
I mean, I don't want you to scam My Patriot Supply, but what are they going to do? If you call from a different phone with a higher voice, they're probably not going to know.
Try it.
Just give them a different credit card.
888-893-7953. Call them right now. Try it. Go ahead.
This podcast brought to you by My Patriot Supply. Did you miss the chance to get a 72-hour emergency food supply with free shipping for just $10? What's wrong with you? Don't worry. Call 888-411-7440 right now. They have a few left, and they're selling out fast. 888-411-7440. What are you waiting for? A disaster? Do it right now. 888-411-7440.
It's Pat and Stu. 888-727-BECK, 888-727-BECK. Rubio is really good last night, too. Here he is on minimum wage. Take a look.
Every country in the world has rich people. What makes America special is that we have millions and millions of people that are not rich, that through hard work and perseverance are able to be successful. Mm-hmm. The problem is that today people are not successful working hard as ever because the economy is not providing jobs that pay enough. If I thought that raising the minimum wage was the best way to help people increase their pay, I would be all for it, but it isn't. In the 21st century, it's a disaster. If you raise the minimum wage, you're going to make people more expensive than a machine. And that means all this automation that's replacing jobs and people right now is only going to be accelerated. Mm. Here's the best way to raise wages. Make America the best place in the world to start a business or expand an existing business. Tax reform and regulatory reform. Bring our debt under control. Fully utilize our energy resources so we can reinvigorate manufacturing. Repeal and replace Obamacare. And make higher education faster and easier to access, especially vocational training. For the life of me, I don't know why we have stigmatized vocational education. Welders make more money than philosophers. We need more welders and less philosophers. And if we do that...
It's good. That's a great line.
Great analogy.
And if we do this...
Mm-hmm. Don't roll your
eyes. If we do this, we will be able to increase wages for millions of Americans, and we will be able to leave everyone better off without making anyone worse off.
Okay, let me give you a little Ben Carson story here. I was a welder, okay? Welding blows. It sucks, okay?
You were a welder?
Again, it's a Ben Carson story, so there's some truth to it. The truth to it was I was an assistant to a spot welder.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, you were an assistant to a spot welder.
Yes.
I don't even know what that means, but okay.
It means I'm crawling under sheet metal and watching the sparks drizzle over my face it's a disaster. Okay? Now, look, David Arsati wrote an article for The Federalist recently. I'm going to have him on whatever we'll just do about this because it's the least popular stance in America, and I want to have someone to back me up when we actually go through it. But it's like every candidate does this, both sides of the aisle. Marco Rubio there, by the way, made a great general election argument. Part of me thinks I don't necessarily think the only reason to not have a minimum wage is because it doesn't work. There's more to it than it just doesn't work. Because it's true, it doesn't work. Yeah. But also, there's a real reason why you should not have it the way it exists. I would love someone to make that argument, and kind of how Pat was pissed off today because someone else wasn't making an argument. Rand Paul wasn't making the right argument about inequality. Mm-hmm. Because I like it and I love this stuff. I like, I wish they would take those stances, but I get it. You're a politician, and it's true. It actually doesn't work. But we, for whatever reason, every candidate feels the need to praise manufacturing jobs like they're the greatest freaking thing of all time. David Harsanyi's article was titled, We Need to Stop Praising Manufacturing Jobs, because of the idea that, like, think about it in your own household for a minute. Let's say you're Donald Trump and you make a lot of money. Well, that's one of the first things you do. You take out any equivalent of a manufacturing job and remove it from your life. People come over and they fix things for you. People come over and they mow your lawn. They come over and they shovel your driveway. They come over and everything that breaks down, they fix it. You pay them specifically because you want to get out of manufacturing work. There's nothing wrong with manufacturing work. I've had manufacturing jobs. I hated them. Okay, the best case scenario is, and when nations get wealthy, yes, they lose manufacturing jobs because people want to do other things. When they actually are able to have an economy that supports the types of jobs that we have now that are high tech and things like that, and you can afford the technology to have robots do a lot of that manufacturing, you're going to have a shrinking manufacturing sector. That's not the sign of a country in the middle of a disaster. That's a sign of a country that's succeeding. Pulling jobs that are hard manual labor back from China is not the answer to make us a better country. But no politician will ever say that, or nor can they, because even when you say, hey, you know, we had to open up a factory in another country, you're going to have people attacking you for it, like they did Mitt Romney, like Donald Trump does with the other candidates now. I mean, it's always going to happen. But, I mean, this idea that we have to sit here and praise manufacturing as if it's the end-all, be-all of all society is a little annoying and a little pandering. Margot did it well there, I will give you. But I just don't buy it.
Well, I don't know about manufacturing jobs, but we could certainly use more coal mining jobs, don't you think?
More
coal mining. I think that's what we need.
I'm for exploiting our resources to the fullest, as you know.
Absolutely. Stu, nearly 100 years ago, my grandmother came here from Galway, Ireland.
Okay, yeah.
Poor immigrant.
Okay.
With nothing to her name.
Yeah.
She lived at her sister's house.
Okay.
Her sister introduced her to a man who worked at a copper mine.
We were talking
largest
about
in the world.
Yeah. We were talking specifically about a different...
Butte, Montana.
Oh.
They fell in love. For a short time. They had three children together, the youngest of which was my father, Joe.
It's not really a short time if they had three children together.
Joe grew up in an orphanage because my grandfather left my grandmother, went to work one day at the copper mine, never returned home. Never was heard from or seen ever again. Just left the family. So my grandmother got a job in an orphanage, Stu. And while she worked at the orphanage, her children were brought up there at the orphanage by a group of nuns who didn't treat them very well. Mm-hmm. But it was there, right, in the orphanage, that my dad learned the work ethic that defined his life. He worked two jobs for 40 years, including one as a janitor every night when he came home after working all day as a foreman at the phone company.
Right.
My mother worked full-time as well as raising the six of us children. Stu, it was tough going. It was damn tough going, and combined with the three jobs that they had, they never made more than $28,000. I know. I just need another second.
Just keep plowing through. Everybody else did.
If you could just give me a little more time here. If you could just give me. Now, everybody else has had time to tell their stories about their dad, their mom, and their grandparents. I mean, this has nothing to do with anything I'm talking about. But if I could just pander for a little bit. And kind of set the stage so that you feel badly and that you feel some sympathy, and I've humanized myself, and then we've made that connection, then I can tell you that illegal immigration sucks, and my grandparents and great-grandparents came here legally. Thank you.
Oh, wow, that was, thank you for the, that is how they answer every question.
Jeez.
It has nothing to do with it.
Shut up!
Yeah, you know, well,
shut up!
The champion of that particular philosophy, and it works well for him, is Marco Rubio. He's very good at
Rubio does the, my dad was a,
yeah.
barber?
No, or bartender. Bartender. And his mom was a maid, maybe?
And his mom was a maid, or, you know, and then Huckabee does that, too, all the time.
Yeah, Huckabee does it. Cruz does it sometimes, but he's usually talking about his dad fleeing communist Cuba. It's a little bit more riveting.
Yeah, it is.
But, I mean, you know, look, they're both good stories, and I think there's something to the Marco story. He does that really well, and it does well when he does it. I mean, it performs well because it's a story of a normal American family who's risen up and kind of overcome basic challenges to be able to provide for their children. It's good. Mm-hmm. You could do it too much, though.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they all. I mean, they all had their... You know, I was out for a walk yesterday. I was here in the beautiful town of Milwaukee, and I ran into a little six-year-old girl, Misty. and she wanted to tell me that we needed safer coal mines because her parents worked in the coal mines of West Virginia and both are dead.
Okay. And she moved here by herself?
She's here by herself now. She ran away. Stop it.
And came to Milwaukee?
She came to Milwaukee.
That's a strange story. Strange story. All right, 888-727-BECK. By the way, the time that each of the candidates had last night blows me away. You could have never convinced me of this. Ted Cruz had the most time of anybody.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Who got the most speaking time at the GOP debate? Okay, airtime and then in polls. So airtime went to Cruz with 14.8% of the time. Looks like Kasich is number two at 13.8. Then Trump at 13.3. Jeez. Followed by Rubio. And Fiorina, and then Bush. Okay, so and then Paul.
You get it.
Carson.
It's interesting. It's it's surprising they can't get the... I mean, they're pretty close there. I mean, the lowest was Ben Carson with about 9 minutes, and Cruz is about 13. So that's pretty close.
But you know, when you got the guy who's second in the polls getting the least amount of time, that's not right.
But it's also
not right.
I'm not saying it's a strategy from Ben Carson because I don't think that they're saying, like, look,
I think that's just how he is.
I just think that's how he is, and I don't think he minds it.
Yeah.
I don't think he's out there like all. I mean, he has. I think he did lightly complain in one of those debates about.
I was thinking about that because he said, "You forgot I was here."
Right.
Or something
he said something
like
that. But that's not horrific, and I think honestly. You know, the issue Ben Carson, the problems that Ben Carson can have, and most of the time he's avoided these, but, you know, is getting into drilling down deep into details and that sort of thing. It's not necessarily his bag. And so if he could stay, show his persona, which everyone loves, it's that laid back, he's very kind, he comes off as very kind, and not be the person interrupting, I think that benefits him and it plays to his brand, you know? I mean, you know, someone like... you know, John Kasich's brand, which is, you know, basically, I mean, I don't even know. I was going to say...
John Kasich's brand?
Yeah, it's like...
It's the irritating brand.
I was going to go to the specific... Yeah, forget it. But yeah, exactly. It's a terrible brand at this point. It's a failed brand.
Yes.
You know, so it's kind of understandable that he did that. I think Ben Carson's smart for doing that.
It's Massengill. You could call it Massengill brand.
It is that, except Massengill's too successful.
All right. 888-727-BECK. More Pat and Stu coming up. Speaking of Kasich, we might have an emergency on our hands.
Really?
We'll have to talk about that.
Hope everything's okay.
Period 4 and 12.
Yep.
That's his disclaimer there for the financial thing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now that we've finally tracked that one down. Do we have a minute to do? Do we have time to do? Yeah, we have time.
Yes, we have time. We have plenty of time. We can do whatever we want.
The world is over.
Yeah, we all know that, right?
You know, our climate is basically in the situation of the John Kasich for president campaign.
No, it's worse than that. It's worse than that. It's more catastrophic than that.
Nothing's worse than that.
Stu, are you a climate denier?
Well, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, what are you? You're saying it's not as bad as something, as anything?
That's a great point.
You can't do that.
It has to be worse than everything.
It has to be worse than everything, because you know it is.
The new Holocaust denial is saying that climate change is not worse than the Holocaust. That's the new Holocaust.
That is the new Holocaust denying, yes.
We wanted to look at Al Gore and some of his
claims. I don't want to look at him.
I don't want to look at
him. You want to look at him?
I think if you watch this, you'll realize you want to look at him even less.
Okay.
Here is one of his most famous claims. And the ones he
has
just absolutely been promoting like crazy.
Well, we know that Manhattan's underwater.
Right.
We do know that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And we're going to get to destroying that terrible, terrible logic from Al Gore right now.
The sky is falling. Do you know the chickens that believe that in the story get eaten? Yet the environmental belief of a falling sky due to our SUVs has become sacrosanct in our society. Question it. And become the equivalent of a Holocaust denier. The main chicken predicting the falling sky is none other than Al Gore, a man who has been a complete liar every second of his life for at least as long as I've known he's existed. When you lie a lot and get caught a lot, you tend to find justifications for your behavior. And Gore has been doing that quite a lot. Recently, he's come to claim that his scare tactics from his B-level horror film, An Inconvenient Truth, have been vindicated. If he wanted to do a monologue about every time we caught Al Gore lying, this would not be a once-a-week show. It would be multiple simultaneous live 24/7 networks. But this particular lie is so supernaturally disingenuous, the architecture must be highlighted. What Gore has been talking about is Superstorm Sandy. A storm so super, it wasn't really a hurricane anymore before it hit the East Coast. The storm caused upwards of $70 billion in damages, not because of its strength, but because of where it hit. New York City, you know, the place that contains the low-lying island where we store most of our tall buildings. Let me paint the horrifying picture for you. In less than an hour, a 13-foot storm surge deluged the city, swallowing everything below Canal Street. The Battery was particularly devastated. Docks were destroyed, and ships were swept onto streets. Further uptown, a bridge that connected Harlem to Ward's Island was washed away, and somewhere in Chinatown, the East River likely met the Hudson. Oh, actually, sorry, that wasn't about Sandy at all. It was a story about the Great New York Storm of 1821, long before there were SUVs. Gore's reaction to Sandy was less mourning for the victims and more celebrating his own brilliance. Not incidentally, you have to be a special kind of douche to use human tragedy to prove yourself right. And that's why Al Gore is a vaunted member of the Douche Hall of Fame.
Douche Hall of Fame.
Here's what he said. The single most common criticism from skeptics when the film came out focused on the animation showing ocean water flowing into the World Trade Center memorial site. Skeptics called that demagogic and absurd and irresponsible. It happened last October 29th, years ahead of schedule. Over the past few years, Gore has peppered his mindless followers with version after version of these comments, all with the same story. In An Inconvenient Truth, I predicted New York City would be underwater. Superstorm Sandy proved me right. And since it happened sooner than I predicted, global warming is even worse than I've been telling you. We are totally screwed. As you might imagine, the kind of person who shows up to see Al Gore speak eats this up without any challenge. Gore knows this, of course, which is the only reason he even attempts it. Because anyone who actually bothered to watch his movie would know he was lying. It's true that Gore predicted the flooding of New York. Here's the clip.
This is the World Trade Center memorial site. And after the horrible events of 9/11, we said never again. But this is what would happen to Manhattan. They can measure this precisely, just as the scientists could predict precisely how much water would breach the levees in New Orleans. The area where the World Trade Center Memorial is to be located would be underwater.
Did I mention that you have to be a special kind of douche to use human tragedy to prove yourself right? And that's why Gore is a vaunted member of the Douche Hall of Fame.
Douche Hall of Fame.
Gore's tactic of using 9/11 to scare people about the weather is tasteless to an almost inhuman level. But hey, he did predict that New York would flood, right? With a prediction like this, there are three elements we need to focus on. The what, which was the flood in this case. We'll look more at that in a second. Then the when. He admits himself that he was wrong on that. Most importantly, though, is the why. Why did he say New York was going to flood? Amazingly, he tells us the why and proves himself a liar in his own movie. Watch.
If Greenland broke up and melted, or if half of Greenland and half of West Antarctica broke up and melted, this is what would happen.
So why was New York going to flood? Not because of a storm of any sort, because of a breaking up and melting of all of Greenland and or West Antarctica. Can we get an overhead? Is there any ice left on Greenland or West Antarctica? Weird. It seems like there is. What Gore predicted was a global 20-foot sea level rise caused by global warming-induced complete melting of the Greenland ice shelf. When he said that, even his scary source material, the United Nations IPCC report, was predicting about 11 inches of sea level rise, not 20 feet. At the time, they only had, quote, medium confidence of, quote, partial melting of Greenland over, quote, a period of time ranging from centuries to millennia. And even if all of that happened, it would only be half of what Gore was predicting. When he said he predicted the flood, he's lying about that too. What he predicted was not a temporary flood, but a permanent one. 1 week after Hurricane Sandy, about 600,000 people in the United States still didn't have power. That surely sucked big time. But in Gore's prediction, 100 million people would be displaced from their homes permanently, never to return. Where do I get that fact? In his movie, more precisely, the exact sentence directly before the clip of the movie he wants people to watch.
Think of the impact of a couple hundred thousand refugees when they're displaced by an environmental event. And then imagine the impact of 100 million or more.
Think about the balls of this guy for a second. It's not like you'd have to check complicated hurricane studies to prove he is lying. It's not even like you'd have to look in another part of his movie. It's amazing. This guy is directing people to his movie to prove his prediction is correct, when he knows that the previous 70 seconds of footage proves him to be a liar. And he is so sure that his audience is a bunch of blind, mindless followers and will believe anything he says without double-checking, that he does it anyway, over and over and over again, speech after speech after speech. And the worst part is he's right. They applaud like a bunch of lemmings and go home and feel wonderful about themselves and their wonderful levels of purity and service. So to sadly, sadly, pathetically review, Gore is lying about being right about predicting flooding in New York. The evidence is his own words in his own movie. And did I mention Al Gore is a vaunted member of the Douche Hall of Fame?
So you got, you're on the climate change bandwagon now, right?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, you just proved. You just proved how critical it is.
It is. It's the main challenge of our time.
It's It's our number one Homeland Security issue.
A lot of people are like, hey, what about ISIS decapitating people?
Shut up.
Yeah.
That's what I tell those people.
They're not going to be able to decapitate people if it's too hot.
Right. In fact, you're not in the mood right. when it gets warmer.
Irritated, you want to stay inside.
Look, here's a good example. Let's say it's 100 degrees in the Middle East in Libya where you want to behead somebody. Well, that was 50 years ago. Now, it's a 100.9 degrees. What the hell? You're not going to want to get your sword and go outside.
Well,
you're going to stay inside anyway.
The only thing about that is most of the warming has happened at the poles. So it would be more like 100.3.
Let's say you're a polar bear, which is stupid because they're all dead.
Well, no, there's five times as many as there were. But yeah, I agree with you completely. But I'm just saying.
There may be five times more, but they're all starving.
Right.
Well, no.
Right. They don't have any habitat anymore.
Right.
They have more habitat than any other animal on Earth.
Well, it melted, though. And so now they're in the water, swimming.
They first of all, they're very good swimmers.
And they drown.
They can swim up to 30 miles.
I think it's 60.
60 miles. I couldn't remember the number. 60 miles. But they do still have the largest habitat on Earth of any animal species. But other than that,
this thing start to finish is just such a scam, such a hoax. I hate it so much. It's so stupid. It is unbelievable. And then you got Al Gore being so dramatic. He's pointing out all of the water that could in some summer month under some circumstances, according to Dr. Math Louth, thumb. Of Dr. Matt Lasky's
A lot of the other research proves this complete BS.
Yes. But Dr. Matt Lasky is who we're concentrating on right
well,
now.
Well, even Dr. Matt Lasky, only some of his research indicates this as a possibility in some of the summer months at some point in the future. By the way, there's something else I never noticed before rewatching this film for that particular monologue we just watched, which was...
Did you watch the whole thing?
No, I just watched that segment.
Okay.
And he says, in the clip that we aired, he says... after 9/11, we said to each other, never again. We said never again with a terrorist attack. We didn't say never again there'd be a storm. That was not what we said. We didn't say there would never be a storm again or a flood again. We said there'd never be a building knocked down by terrorists. And actually, and technically, we didn't even say that. We said we're never going to ignore them again.
He's so bad.
He is all. He is.
That
the
is
worst.
Just so bad. Bad. And, you know, I sat through that whole stinking...
Yeah, I did back in the day, but not this
And it was excruciating. I mean...
Not according to some of Dr. Maslowski's research.
Is it a bad moment? I didn't realize that.
Oppression? Ever hear of it?
Yeah, I have. I've heard of oppression, but I'm not sure how it applies to this particular moment.
I just Really?
Yeah.
You're not sure?
No.
Well, let me give you a little download.
Walk me through it.
Okay.
Okay.
I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Consent is just the key that unlocks rape culture.
Boom.
Wow. Wow. Wait, what?
Consent.
Hold it.
Consent is just the key.
Is just the key
that unlocks rape culture.
Now, wait. I thought consent was the thing that eliminates the rape culture.
Oh,
no. Okay, so I had that wrong.
And I can explain this to you
offline. So, like, if a girl says yes...
It's not enough.
We want to get together.
That just unlocks the rape.
You and me, we're hooking up. Is that okay with you? And she says, yes, it is.
Right. That is, you're raping her.
Wait, but she's saying yes.
You've raped her.
She's saying yes to me.
Describing the scenario is rape.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Wow.
That is your guilty.
Is that according to Dr. Maslowski's research?
Some of his research. Some suggest that. I guess the Thames Valley Police Department has put together a drive called Consent is Everything.
So is this American or is this British? Because if it's British, it would be Thames.
Oh, I thought it was a you know what? I thought it was a college police. I was tying it into the next story. My bad.
Yeah, it's
the River Thames,
Oxfordshire, and Buckinghamshire. So I'm sure that it's probably Thames.
You are correct. You read more of the story than I did. Sorry.
All right.
But the point is, they have this video, which they're trying to tell you about how to consent to sex or something.
Can you consent? If consent is the key that unlocks the rape culture. I'm thinking
I have a different view on this. I think they're trying to say you can still consent, which I don't think is possible, but watch the video and find out.
All right.
You say, "Hey, would you like a cup of tea?" And they go, "Oh my God, I would love a cup of tea. Thank you." Then you know they want a cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
If you say, "Hey, would you like a cup of tea?" And they're like, "You know, I'm not really sure." Then you can make them a cup of tea or not. But be aware that they might not drink it. And if they don't drink it, then and this is the important bit, don't make them drink it. Just because you made it doesn't mean you're entitled to watch them drink it.
Hmm.
And if they say, "No, thank you," then don't make them tea at all. Don't make them tea. Don't make them drink tea. Don't get annoyed at them for not wanting tea. They just don't want tea, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They might say, "Yes, please, that's kind of you." And then when the tea arrives, they actually don't want the tea at all. Sure, that's kind of annoying, like, as you've gone to all the effort of making the tea, but they remain under no obligation to drink the tea.
Yeah, they are. They're forced to drink the tea.
They did want tea. Now they don't. Mm-hmm. Some people change their mind in the time it takes to boil the kettle, brew the tea, and add the milk. And it's okay for people to change their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And you are still not entitled to watch them drink it.
Boy, is that wrong.
I mean, it's so insulting. All of this is so insanely obvious. And the only reason to do this is if you believe every single person on Earth is raping everybody.
Yep.
And that's their narrative.
That's their starting point.
So let's take it out of the analogy into the real world.
Okay.
So we've decided to hook up, not you and me, but... You know, you and a girl, or me and a girl, or
why he's running from the
are hooking up
possibility.
My wife and I are hooking up.
Because he's denying it on TV, he doesn't want to admit it.
My wife and I have decided that we're going to do something tonight.
Well, according to Donald Trump's campaign, you can't rape your wife.
Right. So this is a bad analogy, but let's pretend you could.
Okay.
So she says, "Yeah." I said, "You want to get together?" And she says, "Yes," which would be very unusual.
Hey, my house.
However, let's say that happens. Okay, let's live in fantasy world for a minute. Okay, we start making out, and then she says, "No, is that what they're talking about?"
Yeah.
So I'm getting all worked up,
right?
And she's already said yes to me, but now she says no, and you just must stop.
Yep. Right?
Which, of course, is...
Now, that's reasonable. I mean, I guess that's...
Accurate,
of course, that's
right?
That's accurate.
Yes, I mean...
If you're in the middle of the act,
it doesn't
however,
matter. They are at any point. At
I know, but I don't buy that. I'm sorry. If you say yes, and you're doing it...
Well, but, I mean...
And she says no...
Right, like they...
That's a little too late, isn't it?
It's too late for the act, because the act has already occurred.
Act is occurring.
Of course, obviously, if someone in the middle of having sex with you says, "Let's stop," what are you going to do? You're going to stop.
You're going to stop.
You're going to stop because that's what you do.
You are.
It might not be pleasant,
no.
But you're going to stop because...
You're
going
to be frustrated, and you're going to be pissed.
Here's the thing about sex, and I don't want to include you in this conversation, Jeffy, but it's actually much better when both parties are mildly interested in it.
Right.
I know. It's crazy.
Or even massively interested.
Yeah. In fact, the more they're interested, the better
it is.
And if they're not interested, it's really not good, and you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Where are you going to enjoy it even if you do? These are things that are very basic in our society, and I think pretty basic interactions.
It's unbelievable.
But we have a rape culture, Stu.
Right,
so
and this is the thing.
What you're saying doesn't make any sense.
They have to talk to you like children
because
they have to give this presentation as if everybody is doing this, as if everybody, when they make tea for someone.
Almost everybody is, because one in 0.3 people are raped on college campuses.
Right. I mean, the stats are almost that absurd.
One in 0.3.
As we've said many times, the stats they present are higher than what happened in the Rwandan genocide.
Yeah.
If you believe
they
that.
They actually do say 1 in 5.
Don't send your kids to college, obviously.
Obviously.
No, in fact, would any parent send their kid to college if this scenario were accurate?
No. I don't think so. Not a responsible one.
No.
All right, so let's look at part two of this and see where this thing leads.
And if they are unconscious, don't make them tea.
Oh, come on.
Unconscious people don't want tea, and they can't answer the question, do you want tea?
No kidding.
Because they're unconscious.
What are we for?
Okay, maybe they were conscious when you asked them if they wanted tea, and they said yes. But in the time it took you to boil the kettle or brew the tea and add the milk, they are now unconscious.
Okay, now they have
You should
no
just put the tea down.
Even though they said
make
yes.
sure the unconscious person is safe. And this is the important part again. Don't make them drink the tea. They said yes then, sure. But unconscious people don't want tea.
This is insulting. Mm-hmm.
If someone said yes to tea, started drinking it, and then passed out before they'd finished it, don't keep on pouring it down their throat. Take the tea away. Make sure they are safe, because unconscious people don't want tea. Trust me on this. If someone said yes to tea around your house last Saturday, that doesn't mean they want you to make them tea all the time. They don't want you to come around to their place unexpectedly and make them tea and force them to drink it, going, but you wanted tea last week. Or to wake up to find you pouring tea down their throat, going, but you wanted tea last night. If you can understand how completely ludicrous it is to force people to have tea when they don't want tea, and you are able to understand when people don't want tea, then how hard is it to understand when it comes to sex?
It's not.
Whether it's tea or sex, consent is everything.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just...
I see
insulting.
What they were getting at now.
Do you?
You thought they were talking tea the whole time. You thought they were talking about tea the whole time.
Right.
It didn't make any sense to you.
Yeah, but the little drawings didn't fit what their point really was.
No, it did.
Which is kind of weird, but... stupid.
I mean, it's just insulting so to everybody to think that you need to walk people through those things. I mean,
It's worse than this, though. This isn't as bad as some of the stuff.
Yeah.
Because they will tell you that, I mean, it's almost gotten to the point in America on the college campus where you can't consent. Like, you almost, if you do anything, you can still be accused of rape.
Yeah, we should have brought,
You could almost get consent form signed. Yeah. Yes, I'm willing to have sex. Let's see it in triplicate. Okay. All right, can we get a notary public in here? And then you have them sign it.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so now you've got all the documentation and you begin the act. You could still be accused of sex and go to jail.
Do the catchphrase, Jeffy. You've been notarized. That's basically the bit that we did, right? Wonderful World of Sue. I mean, you got to sign in triplicate. You can't. I mean, like, I would say it's actually to the point in some circles where because after someone can consent, the act occurs, and later the person regrets it. That. Still, because later on they say, I wish I didn't do that.
That is not rape.
That's assault or rape or something.
Yes. Can we do some videos along those lines where you also let the girl know, hey, there's some responsibility on your part, too. So after you drank the tea, after you said, yes, I want the tea, then you drank the tea and you still said yes the whole time you were drinking the tea.
Right.
A week later when your tummy's sick because
you drank the tea...
You don't get to say, hey, I didn't want that tea, and he forced it on me. You don't get to say that.
No, because it's obviously not true. And you get to say it if you're in Rolling Stone magazine, but other than that, you don't get to say it.
Well, we'll see. After this fraternity lawsuit for $25 million, we'll see if you get to.
I love that lawsuit.
I do, too. That's a great one.
Yeah, pretty understandable.
They deserved it. So that's fascinating stuff from the Thames Valley Police's Consent is Everything drive. That's wonderful.
And that's, that's part of the culture on campus, Pat.
Yeah.
The same culture that does not give safe space to black students who
You know what that is? That's space rape.
Space.
So powerful.
So powerful.
The construct you've come up with is so powerful.
Thank you.
That is, by the way, the
consent is an artificial construct.
Yes,
this
and it's also
space rape is real.
The key to unlocking rape culture. It's just the key.
Did you come up with that, or is that an actual thing?
It's from that stupid segment.
It is?
World stupid.
But I always like that a lot.
Because it is something you can actually hear them saying. And then
I thought they probably did.
Like Melissa Harris Perry would say it. And you'd be what did she just say? And then
consent is just the key
that unlocks the rape culture.
Okay. All right,
just remember that. Maybe you'll get a bumper sticker with that one, and that'll help people remember it.
It's already there.
Okay, good.
Yeah, they're putting it on my car right now.
So the reporter who was trying to interview people from the ridiculous movement, trying to get people fired on the Missouri campus, they had the professor backing him up, wanted to get some muscle on there to remove the reporter. That professor now has resigned.
Bye-bye.
Apologized first, then resigned. Which is kind of funny just the perspective of... Her goal in life was to get someone else fired because they did something that people didn't like.
Yeah.
And then guess who reaps what they sow?
So great.
Her. that one.
And she's sweet, too. She looks like she's probably a lot of fun to be around.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you'd like to sit down and have a nice dinner with her, maybe a little candlelight.
I don't know about
tea. See if she'd like to have some tea.
Yeah.
Right? No. Maybe not. it's pathetic.
Eek. So that is it. I've reached out to Journalists Evolved to offer my sincere apology, she said, to express regret over my actions. I regret the language and strategies I used. I sincerely apologize. Again, if the president of the campus made this statement, he would still get fired.
Mm-hmm.
He would still have to resign. And she did actually resign. Her appointment to the School of Journalism, according to the dean. I never root for people to get fired over this stuff because I just don't care. I'd rather have people who are come out and say what they actually believe. And, you know, I mean, I could tell you that if my kid was at the University of Missouri in this woman's class, I would not have them in that class anymore. But that's something different. I mean, Missouri wanted to, it's not like Missouri didn't know this. This is not a surprising stance from this woman.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a shocker.
She's won all kinds of awards.
Yeah, she's won all kinds of awards. They listed all of her research on the website. We went through it. It was all nuts. It's all crazy.
It sure is.
You hired this woman knowing she's nuts. And to act as if now you need a resignation because she said the word muscle in the wrong sentence is ridiculous. She should be there. If you hired her before, you should keep her because she's doing exactly what you hired her for. She's bailing them out by resigning, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be perfectly honest about it. Sharpton...
she's a warrior for social justice, Stu.
She sure is. So. Al Sharpton, also a warrior for social justice, has said that the Missouri protesters have given a ray of hope to him and I guess, his movement. He says the University of Missouri ought to be congratulated and extolled. They showed how you can win by using persistence, discipline, building coalitions. They accepted the support. But again, like, what are they winning? What's happened here with social media and the way that, you know, kind of our society is evolving in a negative way is we have now come to the point that we just praise the act of getting something done.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, hey, they stood up, they worked together, they got their goal done. Well, what the hell was the effing goal? The goal was crap. The goal was getting a man fired for doing nothing. That's not a goal. It's a economic attack.
No one knows what this man did to deserve this. No. Nobody knows.
No, I mean we
didn't
got through the,
do
he didn't do
enough.
Anything. The rich kid who started the hunger strike and began this whole process can't articulate what he did wrong.
Do enough for the people who are oppressed. Okay.
Now we know.
There's nobody oppressed.
Now we know that, again, so the incidents we went through, we have a little bit more light on them now. One is the poop swastika, which we talked about later, which apparently there's no evidence that it occurred, and it looks like it didn't occur.
Right.
Okay? Right.
No one has any evidence. Within the age of camera phones, no one took a picture of it. No one has it. It happened after people went to sleep. No one knows what the reasoning of it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
Right.
The guy who went up to the 11 people, remember the white guy went up to the 11 black people, and we said, what are the circumstances where that happens? We now think we know the answer to that, which is he was absolutely hammered out of his mind and has been thrown off of campus. So they actually did take
the incident,
a step
right, the incident,
and threw him off of campus because of it.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? So the only one I don't know anything about was, and then the other one was off campus. It wasn't even on campus.
Yeah.
The other one was a Thomas Jefferson statue, which, as far as I know, is still there.
Yes.
So
that one
that's
is
it.
There.
And then there was the guy who came in. What did he say?
I'm sorry. If your main issue is to get a founding father statue off of your campus, you don't have a worthy cause. Shut up. Move on. Okay? Move on. I'm not resigning. So get over it. And that's what you do.
And
that's if you have any kind of integrity, that's the stand you take. And obviously they don't have any.
Well, and the president had already set up all kinds of diversity training for the freshmen already. And they had already set up bullet points of
It's already going to be agonizing.
Right. And he had already set up all this stuff to start taking place next year with meetings and find out what more we can do meetings before they even implemented them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. And we mentioned earlier that the Missouri campus police have told students, call 911 immediately if you hear hurtful speech. I mean, it is just blatantly unconstitutional. Although they're masking it in that,
well, we can't arrest you, but what we will do is we will drag your ass before a disciplinary council and have you kicked out of school.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it is actually constitutional, unconstitutional, although it might be because it's a state-sponsored school. Right. You know, because a private university could do that. They could say, we don't like your speech and throw you out. I mean, it's not supposed to be the...
Yes, but they can't arrest you for it.
No, they can't arrest you. But they said in the letter that they're not going to arrest you. It's not
a
crime.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
But they did say they could take disciplinary action, and you can. Mm-hmm. If you're drunken and you're making a fool of yourself, you know, they can actually take action against you.
I want to know what is... Okay, define hurtful speech. Define hateful speech.
But as we talked about with the Constitution, and we've said this a million times, it's about Congress taking action federally to suppress speech. I don't think this necessarily falls into that category. It's just like, what are they doing? What are they looking out for? It's not a good... You know, this is supposed to be a place where you can air ideas. There should be really crappy groups on campuses saying awful things because that's what the whole thing is about. It's about exploring views from all over the place. I mean, Jeffy did a lot of experimentation back in the day.
I still do. I don't know what you're talking about.
More patents, too.
Still.
888-727.
I mean, a lot of experimentation. Some of the stuff is, I don't even know. It's just, what you're doing.
All right, 888-727, Beck, it's Pat. Stu, Germany shouldn't send back refugees to their first point of entry in the European Union based on the bloc's Dublin Accord, according to Hungarian Foreign Minister Peter. We'll just call him Peter because his last name is unpronounceable. And that's what he said, according to an interview with a news service. The Dublin system is dead since, apart from a few exceptions, countries aren't abiding by its terms. Not a single Syrian should be returned from Western Europe to Hungary. You know, they've all flooded into Germany. Now Germany's having all these problems, and they want to say, hey, we'd like to distribute some of these people around to some of our other countries in our great, you know, union here, our European union that we have and everybody loves so much. So how about you take some of these guys? And Hungary's like, no. Mm-mm. No, thank you. Hungary has built a razor wire fence along its southern border to keep refugees out. They've been the staunchest critic of German Chancellor Angela Merkel's open door policy to welcome an estimated million migrants this year, mostly refugees from Syria. So Germany's apparently taken in around a million, and it was 400,000 somewhere else. And I forget where that was. And then there was a bunch in Croatia, and there's, I mean, it's just an absolute mess, and they don't know what to do about it. They don't want to look like they're inhuman, like they're, you know, violating people's rights, like they don't care about these poor people who are fleeing strife. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, they let them all in. What happens to their country?
It's a tough situation. Again, we've discussed it, but these situations keep arising.
I got a proposal. I mean, I don't know if anyone's interested in hearing it.
Probably not, but we'll humor you.
Floating country.
A floating country?
Floating country for Syrian refugees. You build a giant, cool, like, country with, like, and you can make, like, hotels and pools and make it spectacular. Donald Trump can build it. And then he can eminent domain the ocean and then build a floating country, and then they can go there, and then everyone else can have their countries, too. It's called having a country. Okay? Think about it. I'm Stu Regeer. Vote for me.
Okay. It's interesting, Stu. It's
the only thing I'm problem is if you get too many refugees on there, I'm afraid
to tip over and capsize. We're all afraid of that.
And we're all afraid of that.
Then you really do have a problem there.
You really do.
Some serious floating people.
That, you're right. That's right. The boat people. They will want to be boat people, but they won't be boat people.
No. Slovenia is also erecting a fence along their border with Croatia to control migrant flow. They started erecting the razor wire fence along parts of its border with Croatia amid heavy security Wednesday, saying, want a better control over the surge. Around 180,000 people fleeing war in Syria and Afghanistan have entered Slovenia alone since mid-October.
Wow.
It is now not even mid-November, so less than a month, 180,000 people into Slovenia. Look up the population of Slovenia. What is that? I mean, I'd like to know what the... figure would be in the United States.
2 million.
2 million people. So you're talking about almost 10%.
Yep. Again, that would be
a
like
10% increase. Mm-hmm. God, it's amazing.
A lot of interesting laws in Slovenia, isn't there, Jeffy?
A lot of people don't want to go to Slovenia.
Yeah, usually they don't have a problem keeping people out. I don't think that's normally a scenario that Slovenia worries about.
It isn't that big of a destination point.
But certain people who really know the back alleyways, like the Slovenia.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Jeffy was very much down that road.
That's a good
question. Eastern Bloc women, Jeffy's specialty.
Amen.
It wasn't a prayer, Jeffy. That was that was not a prayer.
Okay, so like the Czechoslovakian women?
You don't want to go further. You don't want to go further.
No,
investigating
probably not.
This.
No, probably
it's
not.
Like you take a few steps down a dark alleyway, and you're hearing strange sounds at the end of the alleyway.
Ignore them.
You want to turn
get out
around
of the alley.
And go back in.
No, yeah. Stu.
Jeffy,
what you want is a nice big cup of tea.
What?
Let's move on. do you think? I don't know. Do you think this thing actually gets solved there? I mean, it's such a.
Sure doesn't seem like it.
It's such a bizarre thing.
And yeah, and they've gone too far down the political correctness road, right?
I know. Once you've allowed a million in, how can you stop? The next person's going to be like, wait a minute, you just let a million of my countrymen in, you're not going to let me in?
Which is why they expect another 4 million by the end of next year.
But just the four?
Just 4 million.
How many people live in Syria? Do they have it's like the Clone Wars. They've got 9 zillion people living in that city. What is the population of Syria? It can't be that much.
I don't know. 20 million?
Population of Syria is
22.85 million. Wow, so close with the first guess. 22 million.
22.85.
All right. So almost 21 million people. They've already lost a million or so. And now they're going to lose 4 million more? That's a lot.
That's, a quarter of their population? I mean,
and
again,
not to mention who has, how many have died in their
that's
wars.
True, too. I mean, right. It really is an ugly situation. I just don't know.
Really bad.
Because, you get caught up in the sort of pragmatic thing. It's like watching, if you remember, what's the movie, Jeffy? We've talked about it many times. You're the other person I know who's seen it, which is that movie about the Nazis where they're sitting around the table and they're discussing.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that was the HBO or Showtime special.
Yeah, I think it was HBO. I can't think of the name of it. But
they're
negotiating. What to do with the Jews. You know, they're figuring out this is the final solution conversation where they decide, you know what, we're going to go for it, let's eliminate them. And so the conversation doesn't really revolve as much around whether they're going to kill all the Jews. That's kind of assumed. The other options being tossed around the table are maybe we should just sterilize all of them so there won't be another generation. Or, you know, should we apply other means of imprisonment or whatever? And they decide, of course, to go around and kill the Jews. But what's amazing about the movie is how much conversation there is about the just pragmatic elements of it. How the hell do we get all these people from A to B? What about the level of Jewishness? If they have a relative two generations back that was Jewish, are they Jewish? Do they get killed too? How, and they go through this whole process, and you think, as much as this is a human tragedy with war and people dying in Syria and this awful torture and beheading and all of this, there's this people-moving element of this.
Yep.
You, of course, want everyone that wants to get out of Syria to get out of Syria, but mm-hmm. what the hell do you do with everybody? Not because you care about, you know, because you're angry at Syria or you don't want new people in your country or you, you know, are evil Donald Trump on immigration. It's what do you do? How can our country survive if we add this many people who obviously don't speak mm-hmm. the language, who don't have jobs,
don't share the culture,
who don't share the culture? All those concerns are real, and you know it is you know a major thing they're going through right now in Europe.
In conspiracy. I love the whole fact that they're around and they're arguing these little bits and points, but the Nazis are like, okay, well, we're already doing it, and you can go ahead. We would let this day happen so you'd have a nice little lunch and get together and feel good about yourselves, but here's the paperwork, and this is what we're doing.
Well, everyone's been in a meeting like this. Not a meeting about killing the Jews, but a meeting like this, in that you come in, and they're saying, you know what, we really need you in this meeting because we want to discuss the future of this particular project.
Then
you walk in there, and you have all these ideas, and then the other people come in, and they tell you what the future of the project is. There is no need for your ideas. No one cares what you think. They're doing what they're doing, and that was the relationship between the SS and the Nazi politicians who mm-hmm. all believe, wait a minute, we've passed laws that say that Jews can be sterilized. Why not just do that? We don't care about your laws. We're doing what we want to do. They're all going to be executed.
Yeah, Kenneth Branagh was the...
That was a good freaking movie,
that was
too.
Really, I mean, he's great.
Because all it is that meeting and the discussions that went on, the documented discussions. It's not like there's not much else going on. I mean, you could watch this movie every... child would look at this, you know, if you're a teenager, you'd think it was the most boring thing in the world because it's just a conversation around a table.
But it's
the whole
really
movie.
Good.
But when you know the story and you care about World War II like that, oh gosh, it is chilling. It's chilling.
888-727 Beck, more Pat and Stu coming up.
Stanley Tucci's
great.
That is a great cast. It's terrible.
I know.
AAA727-BECK is the phone number. Dorms for grown-ups.
Wait, what?
It's an interesting... dorms for grown-ups.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Co-working is probably a familiar concept at this point, but Troy Evans wants to take this idea a step further. Friday, on the top of two floors of his building, he started construction of a space he envisions as a dorm for millennials. Mm-hmm. Though he cringes at the word dorm. Common space, as he's calling it, will feature 21 micro units, which each pack a tiny kitchen, bathroom, bedroom, and living space into 300 square feet. The micro units surround shared mm-hmm. common areas, including a chef's kitchen, game room, and a TV room. So you're living... I actually don't think this is a bad idea because, you know, why not? You know, you have a small... It's like a hotel room, essentially, except you have a common space mm-hmm. where you can go and you can make food or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're sharing it with adults, so hopefully it's maybe a little cleaner. That's what they're kind of thinking. Plus, in cities like New York, at least, I mean, the pricing is so high. To get a little 300-square-foot thing where you have basically your own hotel room, and then you go into a common space and there's a TV area, a gaming area, a kitchen. It's actually not
that
a bad option.
Share with everybody?
Yeah, that you kind of share with everybody.
Yeah, I'm going to say no.
Well, I mean, you're going to say no, but you're a married man with multiple children.
Yes.
Like multiple hundreds of children.
Yes.
Like 5,000 children.
In my own house that I don't have
to
share
house. Right, but
common space.
You may be in a different space in life than some others, Pat.
It's possible. but I'm going to say no.
I mean,
to
it's
that.
Like a younger version of a nursing home. I love it.
I actually love the nursing home concept and want to get in one as soon as possible. I don't know. There's some generational line.
They have medical care. They have cleaning.
It's awesome.
They have house cleaning.
I visited my...
They bring food to your room. Stu, you are 100% correct.
My grandfather's in I guess you'd call it a home. It was for retired firefighters. He was a big firefighter. It's all retired volunteer firefighters in this place. And it's really cool.
So they discriminate?
What's that? They do.
Against, say, police people?
Have you ever fought a fire? Yes, they do.
You're a janitor, mm-hmm. you can't go.
No.
It's for volunteer firefighters. So no, the answer to that would obviously be no.
If you got
what
paid to be a firefighter?
Bastards.
No.
Bastards.
I don't know if that's true.
Racist!
You might be able to get in there if you got
as
paid
a firefighter.
Bigots!
I don't think it's like the Olympics.
Scumbags!
But it's sweet, man.
A milkman, you can't go in there?
They've got these cool...
Kasich, is that you?
Why are you not understanding? So you go in there, they have these cool... common areas, they've mm-hmm. got meeting rooms, really good health care, food brought to your room, whatever you need it. My wife used to volunteer at a place that was like this as well in Pennsylvania. It was frigging awesome. It was like they just outside, you walk in and there's this big open area with like a bunch of couches and then a giant screen TV that a lot of people are just like hanging out watching TV. And then this whole like counter space, you'd love this, Jeffy, because there's just like cookies out all the time. They're just cookies, fresh baked cookies everywhere.
Look, they have insulin there to provide if you have a diabetes issue.
Right.
Don't worry about it.
They're going to take care of you medically. They had like a bus that would take... the people
right.
that can still get up and get out.
So you get transportation.
To the mall, like, you know, on one day they have activities set up, like games right. and entertainers mm-hmm. would come there. It was like
it was like a
carnival cruise all day long. I'm in.
You do not need to sell me anymore. I'm there.
It's pretty sweet.
Yes.
So I actually don't mind the concept. If you have a room that's private to sleep and take a shower and a bathroom and everything that's private.
And that's what they say here.
Yeah.
Millennials, according to this guy, want the chance to be alone in their own bedrooms, bathrooms, and kitchens, but they also want to be social and never lonely. So then they go to these common spaces that should appeal, where they can find their friends and they can hang out and they can go online and they can watch TV and whatever else. Does not sound great to me. I do not want to do this.
I mean, it's not the best thing in the world, but
no, it's not. No, it is not.
It's not as good as a nice big house. I would agree.
No, it's not.
And also, by the way, this idea.
Millennials, they want to live in their own space, but they want to be social, so they want to mm-hmm. share kitchens.
No,
they just don't have money for kitchens.
Yeah, right.
Okay? Right.
But this is not a bad option if you don't have money for kitchens.
No, it is not.
No. You know what my kids want? They want a house the size of mine right now.
Right.
That's
and
what they want.
They deserve it because they
don't want this.
Well, they were born.
They deserve it.
They were born.
They deserve it.
Right?
Yeah.
And they went through all that.
Work it up
they just assume, hey, I'm just going to move into the same deal you have. Probably not.
Here's the thing.
Probably not. No. But one day, you know, you work your anus off your whole life. Mm-hmm. We'll see. You know?
But see, if you work your anus off, you can't even enjoy the big house.
I know, because then you can't sit.
It's hard to sit.
You have to stand the whole time.
Did you inform them that you work upwards of 4 hours a day?
I did. Like, twice a week, we work that much.
Oh my God. I mean, not usually.
I mean, sometimes.
Yeah, we like to take a lot of days off.
Yeah.
You know, did you tell them you work up to 30 weeks a year? Or you didn't
tell them that? No, I didn't tell
them that. At one point in his life, Stu, you know, he doesn't like to talk about it, but at one point in his life, he was actually working 3 consecutive hours in a row.
In a row?
In a row.
Are you? Oh, man. Wait, what are the what's the medical fallout of that?
It's
bet it's terrible.
Oh, my gosh. Tore me up. Yeah. Look at me.
Actually, about 5 years ago, Pat looked like Brad Pitt. And this is what's happening.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, anyway, this guy says it's the best of both worlds. You have roommates, but they're not roommates. Now, when I was younger, I had a few roommates.
Roommates is not, that's not necessarily a positive.
It's not a positive.
No, I've had roommates.
I did not like roommates.
Really?
At all. Did you like roommates?
Yeah. Well,
you liked it? Did you really?
I don't know that I would say your college dorm cam girls are roommates, Jeffy. They work for you.
They were living there.
Okay. All right.
All right. 888-727-BECK. 888-727-BECK. Also, from
there.
22words.com. People admit obvious facts they learned embarrassing late in life. Embarrassingly late. School doesn't teach you everything, and there are some things you pick up at a really late age, I guess, as people in this Reddit thread bravely admit. Let's take a look.
God, how many of these am I not going to know right now? I think probably a lot.
It took me until I was 21 to learn that ponies aren't just baby horses. What? What do you mean?
I knew that. I want to be clear that
now,
I knew it.
Some ponies grow up into horses, right?
Yes, they do.
Some I know Shetland pennies or ponies are like... They're small horses.
Yes.
Now we're getting right.
There are also other show ponies.
Are you some sort of horse expert over there?
There's also other show ponies that are not Shetland ponies.
Yes.
That are only
like 20
hands high.
Wait a minute. So a pony gets, let's say, half grown. It is smaller than a normal horse. Am I correct in this assumption?
Yeah.
At that point, it's illegal to call it a pony. Is that where we
Yes. It is. And you will be beaten and taken to prison.
Is that wrong?
I think anything above once you're...
Wait, what?
Yeah, 13 hands. I was going to say 20, but I think it is 13 hands. That's how they measure horses.
This is really more horse talk than I think.
No, but I'm interested in this one real quick.
I used to work.
Wait, hold on. Let me start this out for a second. So you're saying the size, 13 hands, makes it a pony. If it's smaller than a pony.
Yeah.
However, obviously a big horse starts out smaller than 13 hands.
That's
why they're saying. When a big horse is under 13 hands, it is a pony.
They aren't just baby horses.
Right, that is a baby horse. I don't understand.
That's what they're saying. They learn that ponies aren't just baby horses.
So they can be baby horses and...
Correct.
Okay, got it. Okay, I knew that. Okay.
I used to work with horses.
All right, our next frame. I was way too old when I learned the difference between foreshadowing and foreplay.
What?
Mom was mortified, but Grandma, highly entertained. And there she is laughing. That's the actual grandmother involved.
It is. A stock photo of
actual,
a grandma?
No, that's the actual grandmother involved.
Next up.
Okay.
An ex-girlfriend thought rhinos were extinct dinosaurs until he went to the zoo. She was 21.
Okay.
Kind of funny.
Nobody else has thought that.
No, ever. Never thought that.
I thought hot and bothered meant the heat was annoying you. I was 14 and told my mom I couldn't sleep because I was hot and bothered. I didn't understand why she looked at me so weird.
Because my wife Lisa has a lot of these. Like she could probably fill up this entire segment.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Really?
It's stuff like that happens a lot to her.
Fun.
And we always laugh about it. But one that she uses all the time and constantly uses incorrectly is the term crapshoot. Like oh, it's a crapshoot in there. Like she uses it as if it's, that's bad. Like, you know, I wanted to get a meal and the pizza, was a crapshoot. Like, that means it's unpredictable and like you don't know. It was, you know,
she doesn't realize it came from the game craps.
Right.
Where you throw the dice and it might happen or it might not.
Right. It's instead crappy.
Yeah.
That's how that's been translated.
Yeah.
And she knows it now, but she used to say that. Every once in a while, she'll just come out with one of those phrases. She's like, wait a minute, did you mean... Like she said the other, this is another funny one. I don't know if this was a mistype or she did it on purpose. If it was an actual mistake like this. But she said, my daughter Ainsley was at her little school the other day. And she was apparently being bad. Now Ainsley, unlike my son Zach, Ainsley she's a little nutty. Like she'll go,
I have a theory about that as well, why that is.
Oh, really? Well,
I'll share it with you. A serious theory.
Wow, I would like to hear this. She's obstinate. She will, there are days where she just, no matter what you tell her to do, she will do the opposite. Sit down, stands up, you know, like it's come this way, goes the other way. Like that's all she cares about. So she had one of these days at the school the other day and, Lisa texted me and she said, hey, you know, Ainsley had to go into timeout today at school. Her teacher said she was being quote deviant. I was like, do you mean defiant? She's like, oh, yeah, defiant.
Deviant.
Deviant would be really weird for my 2-year-old. Defiant does make a little bit of sense.
Yes, it does.
That's funny.
That's funny.
It might have been a mistype, but it was still funny.
All right, here's one that until high school, I thought that islands just floated around. I wasn't sure how they stayed in one place.
They're anchored, obviously.
How could they anchor an island?
They just put the anchor that you see like on you know, like the tattoo on Popeye. Just kind of dropped that off the side.
Huh. All right, that's all.
Next
up,
until a field trip in middle school, I refused to believe that mummies were real. I thought they were Egyptian zombies.
Can't they be both?
Okay. I don't see why they can't be both.
They cannot. It took me until my sophomore year in high school to figure out volcanoes were real and not just something in movies. You're a moron.
I thought toiletries were toilet treats until I was 23.
that's like the misunderstood song lyric thing.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I love those. Yeah. We should do a segment on that sometime. Especially Elton John songs. The things people sing for Elton John songs that they think the lyrics are and they're not. It's just be a, Andrew, make that so. I believed Metallica was a genre.
It really could be a genre. That's actually...
They're their own genre, man.
It's a better genre
music,
than
like,
band.
I like Metallica music.
Yeah.
Like right, it's like a
metal.
Whole...
Yeah.
It's metal. Yes!
Yeah.
It's like metal.
Next up, I learned recently that you take things with a grain of salt, not a grain of salt. A-S-S-A-U-L-T. That's kind of fun.
It is.
Can we get a quick glimpse of the child theory? Is this short enough to do in a quick segment?
Yeah. Okay. I believe that child one, mm-hmm. You've born, hasn't had any rules, he hasn't had anything, so he follows the rules, or she. Mm-hmm. You know, they follow the rules set out to you, they have the guidelines, don't do this, don't do that. Well, child two comes along, mm-hmm. and child two sees child one following all these rules, and child two is like, I... can go farther than that. I don't have to follow those rules.
So finds the boundary and push past
and just pushes past those boundaries because child one hasn't had any boundaries to push past.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I mean,
it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
That's true. You did.
Now, one of the things I will say is that I have never seen the anchor that holds down an island. So
that's a good point.
So yeah, you don't know what you're talking about.
So,
more Pat and Stu coming up in a sec.
Yeah, and it's going to be cookie dough, which makes
what
the segment.
Is? What's going to be cookie
dough? The next segment's about cookie dough.
Oh, my God.
So,
where's
the cookies?
She's over at Mercury One.
Where's the
pizza? Why is he bringing them over there? We're over here.
Unbelievably delicious things you can do to cookie dough, Pat.
21?
Yeah, we don't have time to get to 21.
I can't think of any more than 17.
Okay. Well, how about you can stuff cookie dough into a cupcake and then top it with cookie dough frosting?
That's what I'd already thought of.
Holy crap, I want that. Frost your chocolate chip cookies with chocolate chip cookies.
I thought of that one, too.
That looks awesome. Why not put a chunk of cookie dough inside an Oreo?
Done
then
that
coat
before.
It in chocolate. Your wife has done that, right?
Yes, both directions.
It's interesting. Make an ice cream sandwich out of cookie dough, an ice cream cookie dough.
Yes.
Oh,
nice.
Yes,
me.
Done that before.
Top cookie dough with a layer of Oreos and a layer of brownie batter.
That looks pretty good.
Crap, that looks awesome.
Delicious.
Look at that.
You can put cookie dough inside a brownie and cover
that
brownie
I haven't thought of. That's one of the four that I haven't figured out.
Blend gluten-free dough into a milkshake. I don't know.
There's
to be
no
why would you want to figure that one out to begin with?
Layer cookie dough with caramel, chocolate, and pretzels.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
That looks pretty good.
Yeah,
that looks good.
Ian, I hate pretzels, but that looks really good.
Yeah.
Stir some cream cheese into dough and call it a dip.
Okay.
Yes, I will.
Yes.
It's time to swoosh two chocolate chip cookies together with a fat layer of chocolate chip frosting.
All right.
Okay, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Top cheesecake bars with a layer of cookie dough.
Oh,
my
that
God.
Looks good.
If you're into football, shape no bake cookie dough into mini footballs, then cover them in chocolate.
Oh my God, holy crap.
Or shape it into one really big football like that. You can fill an Oreo pie crust with cookie dough and then drizzle the whole thing with chocolate.
Yum.
You could make a three-layer chocolate chip cookie dough cake. You could fill cannoli shells with cookie dough. You could stuff a classic frosted cake with a layer of cookie dough. Cookie dough inside on top of cheesecake, layer cookie dough beneath gooey blondie bars, turn it into fudge, and top it with ganache.
Or, if you're on a diet, you could do none of these things.
And I got through all 21.
None of them.
I didn't even mention the one I was thinking of.
Which was...
No, don't say it. Don't say it on the air. We're still on the air. Don't say it yet.